Well, good afternoon, everyone. We are so pleased to have you here at the White House at the launch of the National HIV AIDS Strategy. This is such an important day, and it is important that we put this day in context. You know, it's been 30 years since the HIV/AIDS epidemic first hit our country, and it's been 20 years since passage of the Ryan White CARE Act. And at this important marker in our history, we think it is imperative that we refocus our attention on the issue of HIV and AIDS and what we have to do in the United States to address this issue appropriately. It's also important to keep in mind what this means for individuals. And for all of the statistics, there is a human face behind them. We know that 1.1 million people are living with HIV in the United States. We know that 56,000 people are infected every year, and every 9.5 minutes, and that's one of those statistics when you say it, I always have to double check it because it's so stunning. Every 9.5 minutes, someone is infected with HIV. And for that reason, during the campaign, President Obama promised that as a nation, domestically, we would focus on this issue. As important as it is to focus our attention on what's happening internationally, there hasn't been enough attention focused on what we're doing in this country. And for that reason, he went all over the country talking about this issue, and when he entered the White House, he told us that talk wasn't enough, that we had to put actions and deeds and resources behind our words. And for that reason, we are launching our initiative, our national plan, today. This document is the culmination of a great deal of work, and one of the things that I want to do is to thank so many of you who are in this room with us today for your support, for your input, for your thoughts and ideas around this report and implementation plan, for without you, we wouldn't have been able to get it done. I also want to thank people around the country. We went to 14 different cities in the United States, everywhere from San Francisco to Jackson, from Los Angeles and New York and Philadelphia, all over the country, and we talked to people in communities. Because I said there's a face behind all these statistics. There's expertise and research happening in communities all over the country, and we wanted to benefit from that. We also benefited from those who we couldn't touch in those community meetings through our website, and we asked for their ideas and for their opinions and from their thoughts. We engaged with our federal partners as they also engaged with people through panels and through meetings, and we held panels and forums, some of you were there, that I also participated in here in the White House to talk about different aspects not only of this disease, but the ways that we could address it and the way that we could do that in partnership with the federal, state, and local governments, as well as the private sector and the philanthropic sector and NGOs. So we bring all of that information to the work that we've done thus far, and it is a part of the report and a part of the implementation plan. I'm now going to turn this mic over to Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. Because of her work and her leadership and her drive, and I know her well and have worked with her closely for several years, so I can tell you she's a great leader and there's a lot of drive. Because of that work, we are here today, so I want to thank her for that. And she's now going to give you a better sense of the work that is now a part of our national HIV/AIDS strategy and to tell you the ways that we're going to be able to work together. So I welcome Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Melody, not only for that nice introduction, but Melody has provided, as the head of the Domestic Policy Council, an enormous, important strategic focus to this effort, and also some real personal passion. This was not something that was going to drop by the wayside with Melody's help and support. She has played an enormously important role, but so have the other two gentlemen on the stage with me today. We have Jeff Crowley, who is the director of the Office of National AIDS Policy, who you'll hear from, and also Dr. Howard Koh, who is my terrific Assistant Secretary on Health, who is charged with actually leading the department-wide effort, mobilizing the all-hands-on support for the initiative we're going to outline. And I want to start by thanking the three of them because they do deserve a lot of credit for getting us to this spot today. As Melody has already said, the plan is informed by not only those of you in the room, but those around the country who have worked in this area for years, who are providers and citizens living with HIV/AIDS, family members, advocates, faith-based community is represented. And we wanted the most effective strategies and approaches, so we needed to talk to the people who knew about that most effectively. And I, again, want to thank all that helped develop the strategy. When President Obama announced our plans to put together a comprehensive national HIV/AIDS strategy, he recognized that this actually is a critical turning point. In the 80s, when AIDS was first discovered in this country, we were very slow to respond. But eventually, a coalition came together with government officials and employers, community-based groups, and health advocates to put together a series of effective approaches for treating and reducing the spread of HIV/AIDS. In partnership with the affected communities, we began to speak frankly about the sexual and drug use behaviors that put people at risk for HIV and AIDS, develop procedures for screening blood transfusions, encourage the screening of pregnant women, and supported HIV testing programs for persons whose behavior placed them most at risk for AIDS. We promoted community-based and clinical strategies for reducing infections among injection drug use and discovered new therapies that were much more effective in keeping the disease in check. So combined, these approaches helped turn the tide against the disease. And the number of new HIV infections among people who inject drugs dropped by 80%. Transmission during pregnancies went from 1,600 to fewer than 200 a year. Total annual infections went from about 130,000 a year in the mid-80s to just over 50,000 a year in the mid-90s. And at the same time, the length and quality of life of people living with HIV rose dramatically, thanks to better treatment and better access to care. Now, that reversal is a pretty great accomplishment. The unfortunate piece of this story is that since the late 90s, our progress in preventing new infections has slowed. Annual infections have held steady in the mid-50,000 a year. And because the number of people living with HIV has gone up over that years, that means we're driving down infection rates slightly, but not fast enough. We're keeping pace when we should be gaining ground. And that's why the President thought it was so important for the first ever comprehensive national HIV/AIDS strategy to be put together. After a year of information gathering and analysis, of conversation with healthcare providers and persons living with HIV and AIDS, with researchers and health workers, with activists and community leaders and academicians, we're announcing a plan today that has an ambitious vision. That vision is that the United States should be a place where new HIV infections are rare, and when they do occur, every person, regardless of age, gender, race and ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, or socioeconomic circumstances, will have unfettered access to high-quality, life-extending care, free from stigma and discrimination. Now, that's a pretty tall order. And in order to achieve that vision, the strategy is focused on three concrete goals: reducing new HIV infections, increasing access of care and optimizing health outcomes for Americans with HIV/AIDS, and reducing HIV-related health disparities. The goals aren't necessarily new, but the strategy for achieving them is new. We know we couldn't keep using the same approach and expect different results. We knew at the same time, all of us, the federal government, states, communities, not-for-profit groups, businesses, are being forced to do more with less. And we can't expect this to be solved by a huge infusion of new resources. So while the strategy does highlight areas for additional investment, it also identifies ways we can use the resources we have more effectively to prevent, diagnose, and treat HIV and AIDS. And to do that, we're really looking in areas where we know we can do better. For example, we've been very successful at keeping HIV and AIDS incidence low for some population. If you're a white heterosexual woman like me, your chances of being infected by HIV and AIDS are very low, 1 in 50,000. But if you're a black female who's also an injection drug user, your chances of being infected are more than 1,000 times higher than mine, 1 in 35. If you're a gay Hispanic man, your chances are 350 times higher. In some U.S. cities, it's estimated that almost half the gay black men are HIV positive. So part of this strategy says we're going to intensify our prevention resources in the communities where infections are concentrated. And when it comes to identifying resources, it can't just be one approach. Condoms are important. So is testing, especially since we think 1 in 5 Americans with HIV doesn't know it and therefore spreads it to others. What we've learned is that prevention is most successful when we use all the tools available, whether it's educating people about health behaviors or better substance abuse treatment and prevention programs, or breakthrough medical research on vaccines. So we're taking an all-of-the-above approach because it's these overlapping layers of prevention that get the best results. And the final piece of our prevention strategy is education. The progress we've made in the last 30 years has come with an unintended side effect. Americans have become less fearful of HIV and AIDS. In 1995, nearly half of all Americans said HIV/AIDS was our most pressing health issue. Today, it's 1 in 20. And we can't afford that kind of complacency. Not when, as Melody said in the last few minutes I've been talking to you, another American just contracted HIV. And that's why our strategy calls for aggressive efforts to educate Americans about just how dangerous this disease still is, and the steps that they can take to protect themselves and their loved ones. Earlier this year, we got a head start on these goals when we enacted the Affordable Care Act, which included an unprecedented prevention and public health fund. Over the next 10 years, that fund will invest nearly $15 billion to prevent disease or detect it early before it becomes severe. So today we're announcing that $30 million from the first wave of new funding will go to support new and existing efforts to help more Americans learn about HIV, particularly in the most vulnerable populations. The funds will be available for community organizations to apply for very soon, and they'll provide a critical boost to our prevention efforts across the country as our implementation of this new strategy gets underway. But even as we strive to reduce new infections, the strategy we're announcing today also calls for us to refocus and re-energize our efforts on behalf of the 1.1 million Americans who are currently living with HIV and AIDS. And they'll all benefit from the Affordable Care Act, too. Under the new law, Medicaid will be expanded, and Medicaid has been the most reliable source of support for many Americans with HIV and AIDS. There's also a new consumer-friendly health insurance marketplace where plans will be forbidden from denying people coverage because of a medical condition, a fate that has befallen too many Americans with HIV and AIDS in the past. Now, these changes won't happen until 2014, but if we work quickly and responsibly to implement the new law, we're also taking some short-term steps to help those with HIV and AIDS right now. In the last 3 months, we've been mailing $250 rebate checks to seniors who have fallen into the Medicare prescription donut hole. In 2011, those drugs in the donut hole will cost 50% less. And that's a huge help to seniors who are living with HIV and AIDS. We're working with states to create new temporary pre-existing condition pools to offer insurance plans to those Americans who have been locked out of the insurance market because of their medical conditions. And states already have risk pools in place. This will be an additional step. We've announced a new patient bill of rights that will restore some basic fairness this year to those health insurance markets. Under the Bill of Rights, insurance companies will be forbidden from canceling coverage when you get sick or putting a lifetime cap on benefits, which happens too often to people who are ill and need that coverage most. Each of those steps will help Americans with HIV and AIDS bridge the gap till we get to 2014 and get the care they need to lead healthy, comfortable lives. But that's not enough. Under the strategy, we also want to work to link testing to care, since the latest evidence shows that the earlier care is started, the better the results. We'll build on the provisions of the Affordable Care Act that strengthen our healthcare workforce. We'll work to supplement the medical care with other supportive services like housing, nutrition, childcare assistance that we know can make the difference between someone staying on their treatment regimen or dropping it. And this goal is especially important at a time when budget shortfalls have made it hard for many Americans to get the care they truly need. That's why when we learned that many states had begun creating waiting lists for the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, we quickly pulled together an additional $25 million in federal resources to meet the demand for the remainder of the year. We want to make sure that our prevention and treatment resources reach the most vulnerable Americans, especially in communities with the greatest need. And we must continue to change Americans' attitudes. In too many communities today, HIV and AIDS still carries a stigma. There's still too many people who don't get tested because they're afraid of what their friends might think. Too many people who won't pick up a flyer about treatment because they're afraid if they're seen with it, someone will make a judgment about their sexual orientation. As part of this strategy, we'll continue to look for concrete ways to reduce the stigma associated with HIV and AIDS, such as ending the HIV entry ban, a long overdue step that finally we did this year. For each of these goals, we've set ambitious but reachable targets for the year 2015. And the national strategy is not only a document we're releasing today. With it, we're announcing the National HIV and AIDS Strategy Implementation Plans that lays out steps for every department across government to contribute to these efforts. The strategy isn't a white paper. It's a detailed action plan that's going to lead to real changes in our approach, and we hope real improvements in our results. It's also a critical partnership. There are a wide range of cabinet agencies and sub-agencies that do work on HIV and AIDS, from the Department of Justice to the Department of Labor to the Department of Housing and Urban Development. One thing we hope to work together better on as we implement this law is to work together. To that end, the implementation plan calls on Howard Koh, our Assistant Secretary for Health, who you'll hear from in just a few minutes, to take on the key coordinating role, not just for the agencies within HHS, but for agencies across the federal government. Howard's got a great advisor in Dr. Ron Valdeseri, one of our nation's leading experts on HIV and AIDS, who just joined our department as Dr. Koh's top deputy on infectious diseases. So this partnership also has to extend outside government to the community and faith-based organizations and employers and businesses to healthcare professionals and activists who played such an important role putting together the strategy. Our only chance of success is if we carry it out together. So as we implement the strategy, we're also recommitting ourselves to laboratory research that promises better prevention tools, treatments, and ultimately a cure for HIV and AIDS. Under the President's leadership, we've delivered the biggest boost to biomedical research in American history, adding more than $10 billion to NIH over the 2 years as part of the Recovery Act. And last week, we saw some exciting news about how big the payoff from this investment might be when NIH scientists discovered three antibodies that could potentially be used as part of an HIV vaccine. Going forward, we pledge to continue our work to promote new discoveries and eliminate obstacles on the path that gets us from microscope to marketplace. When the President took office, we had reached a turning point. Either we could choose to get used to HIV and AIDS, to accept that it's a permanent feature of the U.S. society, to be satisfied with lengthening lives instead of saving lives, or we could choose to redouble and refocus our efforts, to put a new emphasis on prevention, to expand access to care, to target HIV and AIDS in the most vulnerable communities that bear the brunt of this disease. With the new strategy we're announcing today, we're choosing the second path. We refuse to accept a stalemate, to dig in and just hold the disease at bay. We want to be moving forward. We want to see infections going down once again, access to care increasing, and awareness expanding. The strategy we're releasing today is not an end of our work, it's just the beginning. We've set a target, and now it's up to all of us working together to go achieve it. The person who's been leading that effort in the White House is Jeff Crowley, the director of our Office of National AIDS Policy. Jeff is absolutely one of the visionaries behind this document, and now I'd like to introduce him to talk a little more about it. Jeff.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Secretary. We clearly would not have gotten here today without your leadership, and we thank you and your whole team, really, at the Department of Health and Human Services for all that you're doing. I'd also like to acknowledge my friend and colleague, Dr. Howard Koh. He also helped us to get to this point, and I'm not sure he really understands what lays ahead for him, because really, his work is just beginning. We're investing a lot of responsibility in him and his office to ensure that we deliver the promise of the strategy, so I look forward to our continued partnership. Now, I'd also like to express my deep appreciation for Melody Barnes. Now, it is a gift for the HIV community that the President placed the Office of National AIDS Policy within the Domestic Policy Council. We could not have produced the solid strategy that I think we have or engaged in the comprehensive process to get here with it if it were not for her steadfast support. So thank you. I would also like to acknowledge the many partners across the federal government, but including our federal HIV interagency working group that helped us get here, the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS. They're also very critical to our work, so thank you very much. Now, at the risk of sounding like I'm giving my Academy Award acceptance speech, I'm almost done with my thank yous, but I really need to acknowledge the Office of National AIDS Policy. It's really an incredible team that has worked hard over many months, has made sacrifices in their personal life to really try to produce the best strategy that we could. Greg Millett is our senior policy advisor. He's an epidemiologist detail from CDC, and he's really led the strategy development process, working with the federal agencies and working with me to write the document. James Albino is our senior program manager. He led the planning for the strategy's implementation, and he's worked with HHS and the Office of New Media on our new and improved website. So he'll also want me to get in the plug, so check out www.whitehouse.gov/ONAP, and it's going live today with new information. Adele Simmons has been our policy advisor. She was on detail from HHS, and she led our women's policy work and our work on access to care, so thank you. Natalie Poyman is my executive assistant, and she tries to keep me in line, and she's sort of the glue in the office. And then Gannett Sagai, who is our communications advisor and who spearheads our communications and rollout activities. So I'm really humbled to work with all of them. Now let me turn to all of you. So thank you to all of you that helped us get us to this point. Many of you here are people we met along the way as we traveled across the country. Others of you hosted your own meetings and contributed to the work that we're doing. In innumerable ways, so many people contributed to what I think was a really robust national dialogue, and I hope that you think the end product reflects our best collective effort. So thank you. Now, the strategy provides a roadmap to move the nation forward in addressing the epidemic. I said this before, but it's not intended to be a comprehensive list of all the activities we need to do to address HIV. It's intended to be a concise plan that will set clear priorities and strategic action steps tied to measurable outcomes. So now I'd like to just tell you what our key priorities are. To reduce new HIV infections, we believe we need to do three things. We need to intensify our prevention efforts in communities where HIV is most heavily concentrated. We need to expand targeted efforts to prevent HIV infection using a combination, and that's the key word, a combination of effective, evidence-based approaches. And third, we need to educate all Americans about the threat of HIV and how to prevent it. Now, to increase access to care and improve health outcomes, we also have three key steps we've identified. Building on the Affordable Care Act, you know, the landmark health reform law that's going to do so much to improve access to health care for millions of Americans, but including people with HIV. So building on this, we believe we need to establish a seamless system to immediately link people with HIV into continuous coordinated quality care as soon as they're diagnosed with HIV. Second, we believe that we need to take deliberate steps to increase the number and diversity of available providers of clinical care and related services for people with HIV. And third, we need to support people with HIV who have co-occurring health conditions and who are challenged in meeting their basic needs. To reduce HIV-related disparities, we believe that we need to work to reduce HIV-related mortality in communities at high risk for HIV infection. We believe we need to adopt community-level approaches to reduce HIV infection in high-risk communities, and we need to reduce stigma and discrimination against people living with HIV. Now, to achieve all of these goals as laid out by the President, we added a fourth goal, and that is achieving a more coordinated national response to the HIV epidemic in the United States. And to do that, we believe we need to increase our coordination of HIV programs across the federal government and with other levels of government and community partners, and we need to develop improved mechanisms for monitoring and reporting on our progress toward achieving national goals. Now, the Secretary did a wonderful job of sharing the vision and direction for the strategy. We intend to back this up by a plan for getting the job done. In addition to releasing the strategy and implementation plan today, the President's also releasing a presidential memorandum to support the implementation of the strategy. Now, this memorandum directs the Office of National AIDS Policy to continue to provide leadership on policy setting as we seek to implement the strategy. And it also calls for ONAP to provide an annual report to the President on our progress. So we're going to do this on an annual basis and measure what we're doing. It designates lead agencies that have primary responsibility for implementing the strategy. They are HHS, HUD, Justice, Labor, Veterans Affairs, and the Social Security Administration. Now, for each of these, it has an immediate requirement and then a longer-term requirement. Of course, each of these agencies within 150 days to develop their own operational plan for implementing the strategy and reporting that to the President. And it also calls on them to take longer-term actions, such as designating a lead official, preparing a system to collect data across their own agencies and synthesizing it, and taking ongoing steps to implement the strategy. Now, the presidential memorandum also gives the Secretary of Health and Human Services additional responsibilities for improving coordination across the government, and it's my understanding that the Secretary has designated Dr. Koh as the lead official responsible for these efforts. Now, in addition to the lead agencies, there's also responsibilities for three other agencies. The Department of Defense is asked to develop a plan to implement the strategy in the context of the healthcare systems serving the military. The Department of State is asked to develop a plan and provide us recommendations on how we can apply the lessons learned from the PEPFAR program to the domestic epidemic. And the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, an independent agency, is being asked to develop a report on how we can expand employment opportunities for people with HIV and address employment-related discrimination. So the strategy and implementation plan demonstrates that the President is serious about tackling the domestic epidemic, and the presidential memorandum is a tangible sign that he means business. In a couple days, Dr. Ko and I will travel to Vienna, Austria to participate in the 18th International AIDS Conference. Because of President Obama's leadership in his work to end the HIV entry ban, the 19th International Conference on AIDS Conference will be held in Washington, D.C. in 2012. This will be the first time the conference will have been held in the United States in 20 years, and we think it'll be a prime opportunity to spotlight our work on the strategy and show the global community that the United States is committed to the domestic epidemic and abroad. Now let me introduce Dr. Howard Ko, who's going to speak to us about our plans for moving forward to implement the strategy. Dr. Ko?
Jeff, thank you so much for that very kind introduction and for your just tremendous leadership on this issue. It's such a great honor to work with you. Let me acknowledge Melody Barnes, who's been such an incredible colleague, and we are so proud to have her in the administration doing so many important efforts with respect to public health in this country. And of course, it's a great privilege to work with Secretary Sebelius at the Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you for this great honor to be with you today for the unveiling of this important strategy. I also did want to recognize again Dr. Ron Valdeseri. You've heard his name several times, but Ron, can you now just stand up and wave and get some applause here? Thank you. So we are very, very pleased to be with you today because this is a strategy that has been informed by your efforts, as you have heard. The voices of many Americans have shaped this strategy, the voices of people across this country who are advocating for and living with HIV. And this strategy pays tribute to the many we have tragically lost to this epidemic, but it also represents a commitment from an entire nation for a healthier future. The message is clear. We need the entire country involved, and this epidemic affects everyone. You don't have to be infected to be affected by this virus. I'm especially honored to be part of this unveiling because I've had the privilege of viewing this epidemic from multiple perspectives. First, I am a physician, and in my career of caring for patients for over 30 years, I cared for many patients with HIV/AIDS. In fact, I was chief resident at Boston City Hospital some 30 years ago when the first cases were being described, so to watch this progression has been extraordinary for me on a personal level. Secondly, I'm a former state health commissioner, so I got to oversee HIV/AIDS efforts in Massachusetts. It's great to see many of my colleagues from public health in Massachusetts here today. So now, as the Assistant Secretary for Health, it's a great privilege to work with you to move forward and build better systems of care and prevention and ensure that all Americans truly achieve their highest attainable standard of health. As you've heard from my colleagues, this plan stresses several themes: to put our resources where the epidemic is hitting the hardest, to put out strategies where they will get the best results, and to put evidence-based science first. So those are our themes moving forward. Over the next 150 days, we have a lot of work to do, and it's my great privilege to work with all of you in the department at the direction of the Secretary to map out a plan that has specific steps for our federal cabinet agencies and sub-agencies. And we look forward to working with you and with Mr. Crowley and his office to make this strategy come alive over the next 150 days. Our Office of the Assistant Secretary has a new mission statement, mobilizing leadership in science and prevention for a healthier nation. So this integration is something that we embrace, and we look forward to working with you. The Secretary has articulated a number of steps how we can make this strategy concrete immediately. And let me just review a couple of them for you. First, our Office of the Assistant Secretary will be coordinating activities throughout the department and across federal government. We will be connecting with many of you in the community, and many of you have been tremendous leaders on these issues for many, many years. We will start a process of better tracking how each state and territory is implementing this plan at the local level. We will be initiating consultations with the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender leaders, the LGBT community, to advance health promotion and disease prevention in this critical area. We'll be connecting with offices of faith-based and community initiatives to make this strategy come alive. And we are, again, very, very grateful to members of the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS, the PACHA. Many of the council members are here today for this unveiling. You are national experts in this area, and we are very honored to work closely with you to make this strategy come alive for the American people. The job of implementing the strategy is not one that falls to federal government alone. Our success requires an entire nation to join together so that every person reaches his or her full potential for health. And our vision and our goal is to have a day soon where HIV infections are rare and everybody receives care. So thank you very much for being here, for your presence and your commitment. And let me turn this back to Melody Barnes. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Secretary Sebelius and I were saying this podium is awfully high. I feel like I'm well, thank you. And I hope that you all have a better sense of what we sought to accomplish and the way that we went about doing it. And now I'd like to open the floor for a few questions. If you could let us know your name and where you're from, I'd appreciate it. Why don't we start here?
My name is Robin Webb. I'm from Jackson, Mississippi. I would like to see the deck.
My name is Robin Webb from Jackson, Mississippi. I would like to see the day that the 10,000 people living with HIV in Mississippi look the same as they do in other areas of the country because of disparities and inequities of services offered. And it looks like so many folks have lost hope that there will ever come that day. Has there been any discussion about geographic disparities or geographic inequities in terms of services and in terms of how they're going to be delivered and how the strategy will work?
Sure, absolutely. Jeff?
Thank you, Robin. Yeah, we recognize when we talk about concentrating on the communities at greatest risk, there's different elements of that. And certainly geographic differences is something we considered. So the strategy does talk about how the fact that there's the epidemic is concentrated, and it's concentrated in the Northeast and the South. Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands have very serious epidemics. But even if you go a level lower, if you're in any state, we know that the epidemic isn't spread. You know, so if you pick one state, Maryland, and next door, you could probably say that most of the cases of HIV are in Baltimore and Montgomery, Prince George's County, but even in a city. So in the District of Columbia, it's concentrated. So there's much more HIV east of the river here than there are in other parts. So the geographic issues are something that we think that the strategy needs to address. Yes.
Can I just say also a piece of this puzzle is that I think until the passage of the Affordable Care Act, the dealing with health disparities and the gap in access to good care were dramatic. And some of that was geography. States have very different levels of eligibility for Medicaid. That will change. States have very different outreach efforts with the doubling of the community health center footprint that occurred because of the Recovery Act, that will change. With a pipeline for additional medical providers, particularly medical providers coming out of minority communities, I think we have some strategies now in place and some funding now in place that goes directly to some of the disparities, some of which are geographic and some of which are economic, that have been plaguing this effort for such a long time.
Sure. I'm Charles King, Housing Works, New York City. And not to be too cynical, I just wonder how we think going from one new infection every 9 minutes to one new infection every 12 minutes is making new infections in the United States exceedingly rare. And my second question more specifically is, given the voluminous evidence that was provided to the White House about the efficacy of housing as a structural intervention for prevention, why there's no mention of housing in prevention, for example, directing HUD to target housing for those most at risk instead of many of the current HUD policies that are in opposite of that.
Great. So the first question is really about the goals that we set. And we set that within 5 years that we'd reduce HIV incidence by 25%. We think that's an achievable but also very aggressive goal. Some of the challenges we face are that for a number of years, we've had increasing numbers of people living with HIV, and we've been able to maintain a steady state of the number of new infections from year to year. Quite frankly, we're a little worried that if things stay the same, we are going to start to see increasing numbers of new infections. So just to hold a steady state is going to be some work for us. In the past, there have been efforts to, quite frankly, set really aggressive goals, cutting incidence in half. And I think that we went through a very serious process and are trying to be honest about what we think is achievable. And so I think by setting a goal of 25% is aggressive but realistic. I wish I could tell you that we could set a goal of 50%, 75%. I just don't know how that we do that in the short term. And again, we're setting goals for the next 5 years. Now, your question about housing, you know, we traveled the country, we worked with you, Charles, and we heard a lot about housing, and we feel like the strategy reflects that. When we talk about increasing access to care and optimizing health outcomes, we specifically say that we need to recognize that some people are challenged in meeting basic needs such as housing. So we think there's an important role for expanding access to housing. Now, our point on community-level interventions and addressing health disparities is that we think that we spent too much time focusing on individual-level interventions, and we need better approaches that we can apply at the community level. We don't think, we have a start. I'm not saying housing certainly has a role to play in that, but the emphasis we play on these community-level interventions is that we need to develop more and better ones to move us forward, and certainly housing has a role in that.
Why don't we take this question right here? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
This one, then we'll
I think
take
I have
one.
The
sorry.
Mic, so I have the floor. Nancy Mann, MAC Cosmetics, and MAC AIDS Fund, and congratulations and thank you all. Just a short question in terms of private donors. I think we've seen in the history of the epidemic, sadly, that we haven't had enough private dollars invested in the epidemic here in the United States. So I just wanted to invite you to talk a little bit about how you see private donors making a difference in actualizing the plan and how we could work together to make all of these important goals happen.
Well, Nancy, as you know, the White House has done a series of meetings on specific topics. We've done them on issues like women and HIV, youth and HIV. But about 6 weeks or so ago, we held a meeting at the White House on public-private partnerships. And one of the things we can't say enough is we can't do this alone. This is not a federal strategy. It's a national strategy. We need all parts of American society to re-engage on HIV and AIDS. And the business community does need to, and the foundation community does need to support us. At this meeting, we really talked about sort of three areas where we think they have expertise and capacity to help us. One is helping address some of these short-term challenges around access to care. And we know that many pharmaceutical companies and others are stepping up to the plate to help provide support at the local level and fill in for gaps. We think that's very important. You know, when the Obama administration came into office, we worked with CDC to launch the Act Against AIDS initiative. Now, this was planned before we got here, so we're not saying we did it alone. But when we launched this, it was the first social marketing campaign launched by the federal government on HIV in about 15 years. And so to some extent, we think we need to, as a country, remember how to do the things we used to know how to do. And certainly in social marketing, engaging media, we think that's where there's a lot of private sector partners that can really help us and do a better job than we could do alone. And the third area is this issue that I was just mentioning about community-level interventions. We don't have all the answers, and we need a broad range of private sector stakeholders to help us figure out what those interventions are. Thank you.
Thank you. I would just add to that, participating in that forum with you on that particular topic, one, that the President has consistently said, and you see it here, and you see it across a range of different issues that we work on, that we have to work in partnership with every sector. That the federal government brings a lot to the table, but we recognize that state and local governments, the private sector, NGOs, the philanthropic sector, all bring expertise and resources and knowledge and experience. And one of the things that we talked about on the day at that panel is the fact that the private sector has experience in the communities in which it works, in which it lives. And by building on that expertise, by building on that knowledge, we have a better base of information, not to mention the resources and just the expertise of what you do, not to mention the people who you employ, the people that you work with. So we believe it really is an all-hands-on-deck moment, and we all learn from each other, and we can leverage each other. So I just wanted to add that and take a question here unless someone else has the microphone and I missed it.
First, I want to express my personal appreciation. My name is Dr. Bambi Gaddis. I'm from South Carolina. And in my state, they just recently cut all ADAP funding. They cut the only HIV prevention faith-based program in 30 years of AIDS in our state. And so my question is, given the rejection of many states around the ideology and the evidence-based research planned and outcomes that are promoted through this national plan, what strategies are proposed to monitor local compliance or alignment with the president's national plan? And will the outcomes derived from the proposed federal assessment impact federal funding to states who fail to acknowledge or incorporate those strategies into their programs?
I would, in response, I would say a couple things. That yes, we believe that there will always be too limited resources and we can't afford to waste them. And so how we tackle so many issues is to say we need to rely on the best evidence about what works and we want to make sure we fund them. Already, when we allocate funds, whether it's prevention funds through CDC or care funds through Ryan White, they're given out to local communities and they do local planning processes. So already we make significant efforts to make sure we're funding the right things, they're getting to the right groups. But we think we need an enhanced effort on that. Now, there's a couple things. As the departments develop their own operational plans, we'll be looking for new steps they can take to ensure that we are, again, only funding the evidence-based approaches that work. The other thing is that the presidential memorandum also imposes requirements for the departments to make sure that they consult with OMB so that when they're putting forth their budget requests for, you know, for their annual budgets, that the goals and directions of the strategy are reflected in their request. So we think those two things together will help address that.
Maybe I can also add to the doctor's questions. In terms of monitoring at the state and local level, we want to work very, very closely with state health commissioners and health directors and also local health directors. So many are here today. And part of the implementation that we are going to be pursuing over the next number of days and months is to really strengthen that link. There's also the National Association of State and Territorial AIDS Directors, and that group has been very, very supportive. So we look forward to working very, very closely with all of you to track this at the local level. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Well, I am given the I have to stop sign back there. Before I do, I also just want to thank everyone on the stage, Secretary Sebelius, Assistant Secretary Coe, Director Crowley, as well as his office. I also want to recognize someone who's been a real leader on this issue and just dogged in her pursuit of solutions on this issue, which Representative Christensen, who is here and with us today. And again, I want to thank all of you, I mean, for your input and your work with us this far, and also all the things that we anticipate and plan to do together. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you.